I want to just apologize for the change in the time and also for the confusion because I changed it twice. A lot of different things going on with worldwide gatherings for Mincha and for Tehillim in Israel and in America and different schedules. And it was trying to balance that all and figure out when to have the shiur. I got a little complicated with the other things that I'm juggling. So I apologize for the change in time and I apologize that I changed it two or three times. So for those who end up missing it, I feel bad. But hopefully they'll be able to see the recording. Emir Tashem, for those especially who are in Israel, we'll try to finish by 4:25 or so, so that everyone who wants can be davening at 4:30 when they're encouraging everyone in Israel to daven Mincha. Let's get started. Today is Hilchos Pesach, and I want to discuss the issue, three different issues, which we could say are loosely connected in that they all relate to questions of the definition of chametz. That is to say, how do we define chametz? And even something that's not chametz, how concerned do we have to be that something might become chametz or might get mixed up with chametz? So the three topics I want to discuss are kitniot, gebrucht, and then a very, very brief primer on the issue of medicines and Pesach and chametz. All three of these are topics that could easily be given in a 45 or hour-long shiur. In fact, I think I have given shiurim of that length on all three of these topics. But for now, we'll try to do brief justice in 6-7 minutes, 8 minutes or so for each of the topics. And hopefully at least we'll be a little bit more educated or remind us of some of the things that we know about all three of them. So let's start with kitniot, which are generally translated in English as legumes. So it's important to realize right at the outset that the Gemara in Pesachim and Daf Lamed Hey tells us that chametz, by definition, can only come from one of five grain products, wheat, spelt, barley, oats, and rye. According to the majority opinion, it simply is impossible for something that's not from one of those five to become chametz. However, the Gemara does quote an opinion of Yochanan ben Nuri that rice, or perhaps corn, is chametz. But nevertheless, the Gemara later on in Arve Pesachim on Daf Kuf Yadalid rejects that opinion. So we paskin, the Rambam says it explicitly, the Shulchan Aruch says it explicitly, we paskin that the only things that can become chametz are something of the five grains. If that is the case, so it begs the question, where does the whole custom or prohibition of kitnios come from? Kitnios are things which are things that grow in a pod, or corn, or rice, or things like that. What in the world does it have to do with chametz if we've just said it's clear from the Gemara and the Halacha that only things of the five grains can become chametz? So basically there are two theories, each one of them going back about 700 years. The Hagos, Rabbeinu Peretz, in the 13th century, he describes kitnios. He actually uses the term gzeira, like a formal rabbinic decree. And he says the reason is because people might come to confuse these legumes with grain since they are cooked in a similar fashion, and they're both sometimes ground up and used to make bread. We know there's such a thing as cornbread or rice bread, things like that. And he adds, I guess, on the farm, in the field, they're even piled up in a similar way. So because of this, he's worried that there's enough confusion. If I can have this kind of bread, that kind of bread, he's worried about that confusion, and therefore he says the Rabbanim made gzeira, again, going back at least to the 13th century. Another sefer, which is a somewhat of a contemporary, slightly younger, the Orchos Chaim in the 13th and 14th century, he describes this not as a formal gzeira, but rather as a minhag, as a custom. And when he describes the reasons for the custom, he says it comes out of a concern that when the kitnios were gathered in the farm, or we might say nowadays in the factory, in the processing plant, that the grains of chametz might have gotten mixed in to the grains of the kitniot. In other words, we're not worried about the fact that they look similar or you might confuse rice bread, cornbread, and real bread, but rather that we're worried, chas v'shalom, in your pile of corn flour or rice flour and the like, you might actually have real chametz because maybe in the factory or in the farm, the different products got confused and mixed up. So two different concerns. We generally assume that this is a minhag. I don't think we generally assume it's a gzeira, but we do assume that it is quite a widespread and binding minhag. Why do I say that? So the Maharil, who lived in the 14th and 15th century and is often known as, I would refer to him as the grandfather of Ashkenazi a halachic practice and living. So the Maharil already says in his day, you know, writing 150, 200 years after these Rishonim that I quoted, very strong words about anyone who would deviate from accepting the from this accepted custom. In other words, it's clear that in his opinion, this has already been accepted by Ashkenazim, and more familiar to all of us as a Rama writing in the 16th century, the father of Ashkenazi practice, says, Haminug ba'ashkenaz lahachmir. We have a minhug. He refers to it as a minhug, but it's a binding minhug, nati kitnios, v'ein lishanos. He adds that there are certain leniencies, which we won't have time to get into briefly in today's shiur. What if kitnios got mixed into other food? Do we have to, we don't remove kitnios from the house. There's no balyura on it. It's not like you have to burn kitniot. But we certainly have a widespread, universal Ashkenazi minhug not to eat kitniot. And I will add, just to underscore the point, that the poskim write that this is not like some other kind of minhug where you could just do hatar nedarim and break your minhug. Because since it's not a personal or a local minhug, but rather more of a global minhug, so therefore it is not within anyone's individual right to simply ignore that. All of that is the authority and how this minhag is culminated in the Ashkenazi world. But as we all know, this is not a minhag that Sfardim are careful about. And the reason is because none other than Rav Yosef Karo, Maran HaMechaber, both in the Beit Yosef and in the Shulchan Aruch, he says, Beferush, he gives an example of rice, explicitly he says that it's mutter. And in one place he writes somewhat dismissively, no one is concerned about this except for the Ashkenazim. So in case one thought that perhaps Sephardi pride started with Rav Avadi Yosef, he is definitely channeling his inner Maran HaMechaber of Yosef Karo, who is kind of, he acknowledges that the Ashkenazim are Machmir, but he says that's certainly not anything we worry about. Just to mention two more points before we move on to our next topic, the big issue when it comes to the practical questions of kitnios is how to define what is and what isn't kitnios. Very, very complicated. That's what we would need an hour shiur for, which we don't have. Over the centuries and over the years, there have been many, many debates. Just to give you a few of the popular ones, there's been a debate over the years whether peanuts are kitniot. There even was a debate once upon a time about whether potatoes should be kitniot. We know potatoes are generally not. Many of us live off of potato flour and potatoes on Pesach. But once upon a time, when potatoes became popular in Eastern Europe, there was a machlokas about potatoes. In more recent decades, when quinoa became popular, huge machloket about whether quinoa is considered kitniot. And there's also huge discussions about things such as oils, a separate factor, not just the actual grain or the legume and its flour. But what about the derivative of the oils? So over the centuries, huge debate. Sesame seed oil, cottonseed oil, and in more recent decades, what about canola oil? Just one quick word about canola. Canola in Israel in particular is a big machlokes. Many of the Mahadran Hechsherim will not give a Hechsher for canola, but many, many other poskim think you can. There are many good reasons to think that canola oil should be permitted, and certainly if one has allergies to the other types of oils, or in this year, if there are other oils that may not be as accessible, I personally would think that you could rely, maybe every year, but certainly this year, on canola oil, or what's known in Hebrew as liftit. And last but not least, it's very important to note, Chas v'Shalom, hopefully we won't come to this, but already the Chaye Adam and the Aruch HaShulchan both say that if there's a great need, like Rahman al-Islam, there's a famine, there's not enough food in the market, there's not enough food to get, then in a great need, one could eat kitniot, even as Ashkenazi and the Mishnah Berurah mentioned, even if it's not a great societal need. What if a person is just sick, and the only thing that he can eat or something that's good for him would be kitniot? That actually would be permissible. So practically speaking, we know this is a famous machloket and of customs between Ashkenazim and Sfardim. And I would say as a final word, I think that this minhag remains as an obligatory and binding minhag on Ashkenazim every year, including this year, unless chas v'shalom, wherever you find yourself given the corona situation, unless chas v'shalom there would be a shortage of food, then that would have to be understood and perhaps ruled on by the local rabbanim. But short of that, unless you have a particular sickness or allergy or something like that, which would deserve a shaila, I think the halacha of kitniot would apply to Ashkenazim this year as much as any other. So that was Ashkenazim versus Sfardim. Let's move on to our second topic, which is not Ashkenazim versus Sfardim, but what is sometimes known as Hasidim versus non-Hasidim, and that's the issue of Gebrucht. So very briefly, again, it should be made clear with all respect to the Hasidim that it's very, very clear from the Gemara that the issue of gebruch, the idea of taking matzah flour and then mixing that with water and cooking or baking it, it is absolutely clear from the Gemara that there's no problem whatsoever with that. The Gemara, both in Daf Lamed Tes Amud Beis and in Mem Aleph Amud Aleph in Pesachim, speak about cooked or baked matzah, things that were already turned into matzah. Now you want to use them, soak them in water, break your pieces of matzah, put it in your soup, or do what we call matzah meal or matzah flour. It is clear from the Gemara that these things are not really a problem of chametz. Nevertheless, there were some concerns that were raised, and in very few cases, but they do exist. It can even be traced back to the Rishonim. So the Ra'avya, who lived in the 12th century, mentions that perhaps maybe people will get confused if they see a knedel, a matzah ball, or something like that, a matzah pancake or something like that. They might think that, you know, it looks so good, maybe it tastes even so good, they might think that you use regular flour. So he raises this. This is a concern already in the 12th century, but it should be noted that Rav Yah rejects it. He calls that a chumrah shel hevel. I'm not sure he meant that respectfully or not, but I will say it respectfully. He says that's a ridiculous chumrah. Why should you be worried about that? Or somewhat more recently than that, the prominent Sephardi posek commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, the Pri Chadosh, he also tells a story of a certain woman who got confused, and she saw certain things that were Pesach tik, and she got confused, and she started baking with chametz on Pesach, and people wanted to make a chumrah based on this one woman, and the Pri Chadosh writes, Ein ligzor gzeiros midatenu. You know, be careful, just because one person made a mistake doesn't mean we make a gzeira on the whole community. So people were aware of this concern, but it was rejected. On the other hand, a contemporary of the Ra'avya, also in the 12th century, the Ra'avan, he actually does think we have to be concerned that people will be confused, what you and I sometimes refer to as ma'aris ayin. He specifically talks about something that he calls like a farfel. Again, some small dish that's made out of a matzah, you know, baked type flour that's then cooked or baked, and says the Ravan, he's worried that people, if you eat this, people will become confused, and chas v'shalom, they'll come to use regular flour. And he says, therefore, we should avoid all kind of matzah flours, shel yasu gam mikemach, because we're worried that one thing could lead to another. In commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch already, again, this is pre, so to speak, Hasidus in a formal sense, you do have a minority view that does mention this. For example, the Sha'arei Tshuva and the Chochma Shlomo or Shlomo Kluger both mention on the page of the Mishneh Berurah and the Chochma Shlomo in the back of the Shulchan Aruch that we should be worried out of a Maris Ayin, we should be worried out of confusion, and therefore we shouldn't use things like a matzah flour, matzah meal as we would call it, because we're worried about confusion. So one reason why there are people who are concerned about gebruch is because of the Maris Ayin or the confusion. However, there's a second reason that people who are concerned about gebruch and are careful about gebruch also bring, and I think for many this is actually considered the primary reason. Both the Magen Avraham, as well as that Shari Tshuva and the Machzit HaShekel, a number of poskim in Shulchan Aruch bring down the idea that they were worried, especially in the olden days with the old matzah factories, that maybe the matzahs weren't fully baked. Maybe they weren't thoroughly or fully baked, and as a result, there might be some leftover flour on top of the matzah, which didn't get fully baked. If you break off your matzah and you put it into your soup or something like that, you mix it with water, then that leftover flour could become chametz. That was the concern that these poskim mention, the fear of the unbaked flour in the matzah. And for example, therefore, certain poskim refer to it as a chumrah, but they say it's a chumrah that we should keep. A baal nefesh should not cook with matzah because they're worried about the flour that is not fully kneaded or not fully baked in the matzah. This particular concern was given perhaps the most prominence because this is the opinion that is accepted and strongly advocated by the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the Alter Lubavitcher Rebbe in his Sefer of Halacha. As many of you probably know, Lubavitchers are very, very strict when it comes to gebruch, and that's because we have that already in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, where he's very worried that there might be flour on the matzah, and he says we're not so careful anymore, and therefore we have to be machmir for chametz. Now this concern, again, as I say, it's already mentioned in some Rishonim, it's certainly mentioned in many poskim, and yet it should be, again, with all due respect, and that's why many Hasidisha poskim, obviously, and people have this custom, but nevertheless, and again, it's really one of two reasons. Either we're worried that people will get confused, and if they see you eating a corn muffin, the next thing you know, they're going to be eating, you know, baking with real flour, or they're worried that the matzah wasn't baked enough. In terms of more recent or authoritative poskim, you really have a machlokes. Again, you'll find in many poskim, especially Hasidim, that they're still very, very careful about this. On the other hand, there has always been a very strong, in addition to the poskim I've already mentioned, there's always been a very strong mainstream, and for lack of a better term, in recent centuries, non-Hasidic approach that is completely unconcerned with both of these considerations. None other than, if you want to draw a straight line from the Vilna Gaon, who's explicit, Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner, who's explicit, as well as the Chazon Ish, all of whom are quite explicit, and I think all three would make a very firm Beis Din if we put them together. All three write explicitly, again, that's in addition to everyone else I've already mentioned, that there's nothing to be worried about and there's no problem with what we call a Gebrot. Just as on this point, just to conclude this section, the Mishneh Berurah himself does bring down the second concern that maybe the matzah might not be fully baked, there might be leftover flour, but in keeping with what is clearly the majority non-Hasidic view, the Mishneh Berurah writes that according to the letter of the law, Mikra Hadin, it's totally fine. He adds that there are certain very sincere people, Anshei Maisa, he says, who are machmir because they're worried about the leftover flour. But says the Mishneh Berurah, already in his day, says our matzah factories, our processes for baking are really not a problem. The way we have these very flat matzahs and relatively thin matzahs, we don't have to worry about any excess flour. I mean, if you actually saw flour on the matzah, then of course you'd have to be worried. But as a general concern, he doesn't think you have to be worried. And to end this section, I would just say, and here I'm quoting the Shari Tshuva, who I've already mentioned earlier in today's shiur. Shari Tshuva quotes this issue, he quotes both issues. Should we be worried? Should we not be worried? Yes, Marasayin, no Marasayin. He quotes both views, and the Shari Tshuva ends in a very appropriate way. He says, really, this is an example of Elu, Ve'elu, Diver Elokim Chaim. If there are people who are worried about this, that's fine. That's their minhag. But if there are people who aren't, that's certainly fine. And even the people who are being machmir, and this is a key point, even the people who are being machmir should be aware that this is a chumrah. This is not Mi'ikar Hadin. And in fact, in Chutz La'aretz, as some of you probably know, many Hasidim have the minhag to eat gebroks on the eighth day. Now that's kind of bizarre. If you're worried that there's chametz there, why all of a sudden on the eighth day would it become mutter? So some Hasidic poskim suggest that this is the reason. We dafka allow it even for the Hasidim on the eighth day, so that everyone, even the Hasidim, realize that it was always a chumrah to begin with. And we don't get confused between what's a chumrah and what's mikra adin. So if you're from a Hasidic background, if that's your family and that's your chumrah, so then you should keep your family's minhag. But if it's not your minhag, then you should be quite confident that there are many, many serious postgame over many hundreds of years who strongly endorse the, what I guess you could call the lenient approach, or not being worried about kabrots. Just to spend 3, 4, 5 minutes now on a humongous topic, but just to give you a little bit of a taste or a few highlights, and that is the third issue I had wanted to discuss today, which is the issue of medicines, right? Until now, we discussed things which are clearly not chametz. Gebrots is not chametz. Kidyon are not chametz. And yet, there might be minhagim to avoid. The question with medicines, of course, is it chametz? That itself is a debate. Do I have to worry if there's some flour or chametz derivative in my medicine? Is that a problem taking it on Pesach? Again, a huge topic worthy of at least an hour shiur on its own. But just in 4 to 5 minutes, I'll give you a few of the highlights. So the basic principle when it comes to chametz, which is emerges out of the Gemara in Sochim, Daf Kaf Aleph, Daf Mem Hei, is that unlike other halachos where we say that if a food which is usually prohibited, but if it has become so disgusting that it's inedible to a normal person, it's Ein Roi L'Achilas Adam, then there's no more prohibition, even if you are bizarre and weirdly eating it and the like. When it comes to Pesach and chametz, we're more machmir. There, the concept that's used in the Gemara is it's not enough to just be inedible to a human. It has to be nifsal mea achilas kelev. It has to be so inedible that even a dog wouldn't eat it. And only when the Gemara says, only when it reaches that level of chametz, which is now totally disqualified, totally disgusting, even a dog wouldn't eat it. So the Gemara says that becomes a mutter in hana. You're allowed to, not only could you own it, but you could have some side benefit from it. The key point here is that even though the Gemara mentions the leniency once it gets totally disqualified, even for a dog, the Gemara never says, even about something nifsal mechilas kelev, the Gemara never says you're allowed to eat it, just that you could have benefit, hana'ah, from it. So there are some Rishonim who say, you're allowed to have hana'ah from it, and if you're allowed to have hana'ah from it, you can even eat it. Comes along the Rush, and a very, very influential passage, and the Rush says, no. not only are you allowed, you are allowed to have hana from it, but the Gemara only said that because, in fact, even if it's nifsa mechilat kelev, even if it's an edible for a dog, says the Rosh, it's still usher to eat. Not from the Torah, not midaraisa, but midrabanan, based on a principle known as achshevei. Even though, according to normal people, most people, this is inedible, but achshevei, by the very fact that I've eaten it, I have given it a chashivut, I've given it significance. I'm showing that for me, this is not inedible. Haraya, I'm eating it. Now, because it's inedible to most people, therefore it's only an iser derabanan. But it is also derabanan, says the Rosh. So it comes out, and this is the opinion that is quoted lahalacha, that even if you had actual chametz, you had a bagel, you had a piece of bread, you let it get so moldy and disgusting that even your dog wouldn't eat it, it would be mutter for you to own it, it would be mutter for you to have anah from it, but midrabanan, it would still be usher for you to eat it based on this idea of achshevei. Now, I just summarized, you know, a 30 or 40 minute shiur in 2 minutes. How does this relate to medicines? Because if there are certain medicines that if you know what the ingredients are, the ingredients do contain something that really is a chametz derivative. On the other hand, the assumption is that in most cases, these pills, as we know, are incredibly disgusting and bitter, and no one, including a dog, we would assume, would want to eat them. On the other hand, we just got through saying that even things which are nifsal mechilas kelev are still rabbinically prohibited from eating. So does that mean that there's an isser derabanan? So just to be clear, worst case scenario, the medicine would be isser derabanan. The question is it asr midrabanan? Do we say that this principle, that you can't even eat food that's inedible to a dog, midrabanan, would we even apply that to medicines? So there is a view that says that we do. The Shagas Aryeh, Rav Henkin, there were people who said we apply achshavei to medicines, but I'm here to tell you that the majority view is that we do not. The majority view is that, in fact, we do not say achshavei when it comes to medicines. We would say if actual chametz was moldy and gross, but we would not say it to medicines. First, I'll tell you who says it, and then I'll tell you why. Just to give you a short list of some of the most prominent poskim, the Chazon Ish, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Avadi Yosef, and the Tzitz Eliezer. Again, just to give you a short, brief list of five of the most famous poskim of the last 100 years, all say that fundamentally there's no problem of having medicine, even if you knew there was chametz in it. Why? Because we assume that it's ain't a royal achilas kelev, and the general chumrah that we have called achshavei wouldn't apply. Why? Because when you have a moldy pita or a moldy bagel or a piece of bread, if you personally eat it, for whatever idiosyncratic, bizarre reason that you're doing it, so you're showing that for you, personally, subjectively, achshavei, for me this is considered edible. For me this is considered food, after all, I'm eating it. But the very fact that I'm eating it, that shows that I view it as edible and as food. On the other hand, they all these poskim more or less stay in the same vein. When it comes to medicine, by me taking that pill, I'm not saying that I think this is food. What I'm saying is that even though it's not food and it's disgusting and it's inedible, I'll eat it anyway. I'll swallow it anyway because I'm so desperate because I want to get healed. I want to have whatever the benefit of the medicine is. It's not saying, if for example, just to give you a hypothetical, if you had a particular condition and you were very uncomfortable and a doctor said to you, you have to eat dirt, but if you eat the dirt, you'll be better. The very fact that you ate the dirt wouldn't make the dirt into food. It's just that you're willing to eat dirt just to get better. So too, the poskim say, the fact that you're taking medicine doesn't mean that achshavei, I'm saying this is edible. I'm saying even though it's inedible, I'm willing to take it, I'm willing to swallow it, because it'll make me feel better. This is the majority view. If we had more time, there are obviously many, many nuances. The only thing I want to add to, and therefore it is my personal view that in general, again, you have to ask shailos to your own particular rabbanim, but as a general rule, anyone who's looking at all these books and looking at the medicine list, for the most part, that's a chumrah. Now, maybe it might be a ro'i chumrah. We don't have time to get into that. But mi'ikar hadin, it's not necessary, and that is the majority view. You need to be aware of that. The only two things I'll mention now to conclude is that what I was describing now is about solid pills that you would swallow. When it comes to liquid or chewable pills, that might be more complicated, especially because in some of the liquids, in the syrupy medicines, they dafka add sweeteners to make it more edible, especially for kids and the like. And many poskim do distinguish and are more machmir for liquid medicine. So if you have, in all of these shilas, you should ask your local posek, your local rav. But especially when it comes to liquid medicines, there is more reason to be machmir. Until now, we were talking only about solids. And then, just as a final word, just to say we're not going to discuss, there's a whole topic about denatured alcohol. Whether denatured alcohol, even if it came from a chametz derivative, is that still a problem or not? And this is primarily not so much of an issue of medicines, as much as an issue of deodorant and perfume and makeups and the like. And for that, I'll have to say, Od Chazon Lemoed, we'll have to meet another time, hopefully all in good health and in better circumstances. Like anything that's important in halacha, I gave you a little bit of a background, a very brief shiur. Certainly important to ask your local posek on any of these shilohs, but hopefully now you have a little bit more of a background on kitnios, on gabrucks, and on medicine. Everyone should have a wonderful day. Thank you so much for participating. And again, I apologize for the confusion and the change in the start time of this year.